The following is a classic episode of Outside Land San Francisco. It's Outside Land San Francisco, podcast of the Western Neighborhoods Project. I'm Nicole Meldahl.
And I'm David Gallagher.
David!
Nicole, where's Woody? That's my first question.
Oh, yeah. Well, Woody had a Woody's on location. He'll report back next week. But instead, we have an amazing guest anchor, Michael Marie Lang.
Hi, everyone.
Oh, hi, Michael. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you. It's great to have you here. Have you been on the podcast before?
I have not. Except in the early days of the podcast, I wrote in with a listener question, which you and Woody answered about Stern Grove.
Oh,
and I don't
yeah.
remember what my specific question was, but I remember how excited I was that you guys answered it on the podcast. So I've been on the podcast in spirit.
Wow. So you've gone from fan to guest.
Yeah. It can happen for anyone.
That's the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Take note, listener audience. All you have to do is write one listener mail and then we're just going to bring you on the podcast.
Yeah. Write one listener mail, wait about 8 years, and then this could be you.
That's the process with the Western Neighborhoods Project. Nicole can attest to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Michael, so you have quite a pedigree of local San Francisco history and Bay Area history, right? When you wrote that in, you were working over at Society of California Pioneers, I think.
Yeah, that's correct. I was working at the Society of California Pioneers. I actually got married at Stern Grove. I think that's why I wrote the question in.
Oh, wow.
And then I worked at the Oakland Museum of California for a while, and I'm now at the UC Berkeley Libraries.
And more importantly, Michael is on our advisory board and helps us with copyright and reproduction law. So if you get an official email from us about image use, it's because Michael has written that very official email for us.
So Nicole, what are we talking about today? It's not all Michael, is it?
That's why I came on, guys. I thought it was just about me.
Maybe one of the next podcasts, we'll just do a deep dive into your personal life. But today, like I said last week in a terrible French accent, we're going to be talking about the Rousseau brothers, who were builders of storybook homes in the Sunset District and so much more. So first of all, David,
yeah.
Whereabouts in the Sunset District are we talking?
Well, the greatest concentration of Rousseau houses is... it's kind of right in the middle of the Sunset, like 34th, 35th, 36th Avenue between Kirkham and Lawton, right? And there's just rows and rows of these really fanciful little houses that maintain a remarkable character. But they're all over the place, too. Yeah. I mean, there are others. There's a row on, I think, 15th Avenue near St. Cecilia's, like 15th and Wawona maybe, and they're all over the place. And the style was widely copied. I'm not going to get ahead of ourselves, but the ones that we're talking about in the greatest concentration and the where you can get the most bang for your buck on your essential walks is right between Kirkham and Lawton in the high 30s.
Yep.
You can see some.
It's right near my apartment, actually, and I went out and photographed some, which our live podcast listening audience right now will get the exclusive access to see as we share those slides throughout the evening.
Right. We have a live audience, right? And anybody can join that. Go to outsidelands.org and look for the podcast live recording event for the podcast.
Exactly. And I was walking around taking all these photographs and this woman stopped me and she went, "Oh, are you taking photographs to match paint samples for your own home?" And I was like, "No, actually, I'm a historian and it's for a podcast." And she was like, "Oh," and just walked away. Anyways, We should start, now that we know where we're at, we should start by talking a little bit about the brothers Rousseau, if you will.
Sure.
So we've got Arthur Frank Rousseau, who, and younger brother Oliver Marion Rousseau, and they founded the Marion Realty Company in 1922. And at the time, they're one of the largest developers on the West Coast throughout the 20s. And their father, and I think we have some photos of some of this architecture for our live listening audience. Their father was Charles Rousseau, who was a prolific Victorian era architect who trained at the École des Beaux-Arts. Oh, I'm getting thumbs up. That's great. Before coming to the United States. Brothers... Oh, go ahead. Oh,
and he has a lot of Victorian houses that are still around the city, right? But this Marion Development Company, Marion Realty Company, did a whole lot of big buildings and apartment houses and various things. One of the notable ones is that Crystal Palace Market, which was on Market Street, right near 8th Street. And it was they designed it and built it in 1923. It was one of their earliest pieces.
Is that still there? That's probably not still there, right?
No. Ooh. But Michael found this amazing other construction in like 1929, right? The Gaylord Hotel on Jones near Geary.
Is that still there?
Yeah, absolutely. That is still there. It's part of the, Tenderloin sort of historic region. Well, it's not a historic region. What is it called?
Historic district?
Yeah, historic district, right.
It's that apartment building is just like dripping in art deco, like decadence. The advertising is so beautiful.
They built it as San Francisco's first New York type residential hotel. And I guess the apartments all had little kitchenettes and everything in it. And it had a big restaurant and these guys were high society developers. You know, it was a whole lot of newspaper info about this place. But that's not what we're mainly talking about today, right?
No. So they're building all these fancy hotels downtown, larger buildings, commercial properties. But then the stock market collapse happens in 1929 and they shift their focus. Isn't that right, Michael?
Yeah. So they shifted their focus to single family homes, which was trying to meet the demand for affordable housing. Arthur, who's the older brother, was the finance guy as president of the firm, and Oliver, the younger brother, designed architecturally stimulating houses that were affordable to households of moderate means. So the Marion Realty Company partnered with the Whitney Investment Company, which was also headed by Oliver. So they have their finger in all the pies, to develop some single family residential tracts in the Sunset District, kind of that one block at a time that we were talking about at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, and we should say too, like a lot of developers in this part of town at this time, they're not licensed architects. They're just like butchers who decided to start getting into real estate. But the Rousseau family, they are heavily trained, and you can tell that their buildings are a little bit higher quality than the rest of the homes around them. And you can't miss a Rousseau home. The blocks that David described earlier, they're gorgeous. They're huge. Some of them are massive properties. And the Rousseaus actually lived in them. Our studio audience right now is looking at the home of Oliver Rousseau, which is on the corner of 36th and Kirkham, which was big, beautiful, renovated just recently. And when I walked by it, there was a woman like sitting on her backyard, and I really wanted to be like, oh, can I walk through your patio? I didn't do that, but.
We should say, though, that all these builders, and we've talked about it in the past, these Sunset District builders, they all copied from each other. And so they could just walk down the street and see what the other guys were doing, and then they could build their own. Lori Ungaretti in our chat has told us that you know, right near these Rousseau houses on 34th Avenue, there are some Dolger-built copycat versions intermingled nearby. And I've read the same thing written by architectural historian Gary Goss, who also said he liked to use the phrase Rousseau style unless you knew for sure.
Yeah, and they built a variety of styles. So, you know, typically if you're walking around the Outer Sunset, there's these Mediterranean Revival style, but the Rousseaus added another variation. We've got Tudor Revival, we've got Spanish Colonial Revival, we've got French Provincial as well. So even though they developed these blocks at a time, like, you see a great variety as you're walking around their development areas, and they're really, really beautiful. But there's one thing in particular they developed. Isn't that right, Michael?
I was going to say, we would be remiss if we did not start talking about the quintessential Rousseau kind of style, which is the interior patio or courtyard. They feature heavily in all of the sunset homes that they were designing, regardless of kind of what the style of home that they were building.
And you can't tell if they have a patio or not, right? From the street, they all look, kind of look, they have their various styles, but you can't tell. But can fly over the neighborhood, and we're showing a picture, an aerial shot that shows three rows of patio style houses.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast later and you don't get to see this amazing slideshow, if you just in Google Maps look at 34th Avenue between Kirkham and Lawson, you can see every single house on the entire block has this oval interior patio. And you would have no idea if you're just walking by from the street of this kind of weird architectural detail.
Yeah, absolutely. And other revolutionary details that they included in these brand new luxury homes meant for moderately priced individuals are you ready for this? 2-3-car garages, sunken living rooms, water heaters, and also laundry machines.
I love the phrasing of laundry machines.
Absolutely. And so did the people. I mean, this was a big deal when they started selling these. I mean, people would drive out to this kind of out in the middle of the sunset, and the buzz was going on these houses. We have a picture of 35th Avenue just filled with cars. I mean, yeah. I don't think it even looks like it. I don't think you could imagine 35th Avenue, this block, to look so jam-packed with cars. There's got to be, 40 or 50 cars all up and down the street.
Yeah, and they're building homes out here through basically the end of the 30s. I think one of the last ones out in this area is built in 1937. And we should note too, bold move to build these kind of like revolutionary luxury homes out in this part of town, because the Sunset was still known for like vast tracts of sand dunes that would migrate and scrublands, and it was fairly desolate, which is why they marketed this as a clear investment opportunity, since really your property could only go up in value. And they employed some fairly new marketing tactics, which now we feel is pretty commonplace. Like they developed partnerships with interior designers and staged model homes, and they gave these homes attractive names like Sunset House or Surprise House.
And guess what the surprise was? You're never gonna guess. An interior patio surprise.
Yeah, the Surprise House opened at 1548 35th Avenue in 1933, and allegedly on the day it opened, maybe that's one of the photos that we showed, 6,000 people came to view this surprise home.
Wow.
And which is pretty crazy.
And Lori is chiming in from our chat. She says that a lot of those interior patios leaked. And so we'll look at the pictures and you can see a lot of them, those aerial shots, at least half of them are covered And you're nodding your head, Nicole. Do you live in a Rousseau house?
Oh, no, I don't live in anything that nice. But I do live in a Rousseau knockoff home with one of those interior patios. And I can attest that, yes, leakage is a problem in general with flat-roofed homes of the center patio style. I think every room in my house, no, like half the rooms in my house have had leaks of some kind at some point.
I didn't see that in the newspaper advertisements for some reason.
Oh, yeah, you know, I think they left it out. But I will say the point of those interior patios was that, so all these homes that are squished together on the blocks, that light was able to come in through the center of the homes. And I can say that, yes, it effectively distributes light throughout my house. As you can see, live studio audience, I am very well lit. So the home sold well, but the Rousseau brothers weren't great at managing their debts or their personal lives. Isn't that right, Michael?
Oh, that is very correct. So they had mounting debts, probably because they were kind of overextending themselves in all sorts of business ventures. Like we mentioned before, they had just the realty company, the architecture firm, like a lending company. They were all over the place. So in 1933, the firm, the Marion Realty firm, declared bankruptcy. And they said they had liabilities of more than $6 million. The older brother, Arthur, declared personal bankruptcy just a month later.
So is it, wow, that's crazy. So that's why we only have this small number of Rousseau homes then, right? Because they, I mean, I just wonder, is it because they made houses that were too good and they sold them too cheap? Is that why? What do we know?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they're very beautiful.
Anyway.
Well, the brothers didn't quit building houses at this point. Oliver formed his own real estate and brokerage firm called Rousseau and Company in April of 1934, so just the next year, which was headquartered on Geary in the Richmond district. Mm-hmm. And he focused again on developing single family homes and duplexes just kind of around the city. So you're not getting those nice blocks where, you know, they're developing the whole block. It's just kind of a scattershot approach.
Yeah, he's like filling in gaps, right? Like if you see some of our old photos on opensfhistory.org, there's like things kind of happened haphazard if whole blocks didn't get developed by one person or company.
Yeah. And so after World War II, Oliver moved on to building large tracts of the kind of quintessential suburban ranch style homes in the East Bay. And some of the homes kind of got less fun than those 1930s builds in the Sunset, where it's kind of eclectic styles. But he did keep one of his signature styles through the 1960s. And who can guess what that signature style is?
Ooh, I can guess.
Nicole?
That center patio.
You know it. Love that center patio. So there's a ton of advertisements for these kind of tracks that he developed in the East Bay. And they all talk about this center patio. Every single advertisement from the 50s through the 60s. It's just so crazy how much they kind of latched onto this. And it seems like people in the Bay Area that were buying homes latched onto this also. It was incredibly popular.
It feels very California, right? It's like, oh, let me just step out into my patio in the center of my tiny city apartment and luxuriously bathe in the foggy, overcast environment here.
Oh, and yeah. It was a nice sort of private open space for when you're talking about houses that are 25 feet wide and have a little 4.5-foot fence between you and the neighbor in the backyard. And maybe the backyard in the Sunset District isn't all that great a spot to hang out, you know? So to me, that center patio is really something that's good, that people would like, you know?
Yeah.
Get away from the neighbors.
Absolutely. But you know, before we totally move off of this topic, we have to talk about the Rousseau brothers' insane personal lives, because it's so good.
It's so good. So they were both, as David kind of talked about earlier, just social gadflies. They're showing up in the society papers constantly. They both married in the teens and had very public divorces almost directly after they were married. I'm talking about like within 4 years.
Yep.
So what the studio audience is seeing now is one of the newspaper clippings about Oliver's divorce, the younger brother's divorce. So his wife told the Chronicle that after her husband had been gone for over 24 hours at a yacht club party, which we're also going to talk about. Yeah. he told her, "I was in more desirable company than you make. I'm tired of your old face. I want a different chicken every night like my brother, Arthur," who had divorced just a few years earlier.
Ouch.
Yeah.
What I want to know is Arthur actually eating different chicken every night? Or is it a metaphor?
Yeah, I don't think he's talking about eating chicken, Nicole.
Oh, I misunderstood.
My goodness. Well, is that the story of the Rousseau brothers? I mean, there sounds like there's a whole lot more of the personal lives of the Rousseau brothers, but that's the story of those amazing storybook homes, right?
Yes, a brief but impactful development moment here on the West Side that ended in an all-night yacht party.
A lot of all-night yacht parties.
A lot of all-night yacht parties. Okay, well, Michael, oh my gosh, you did phenomenal as guest anchor of today's podcast. Thank you for joining us. Round of applause for Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot.
And now it's time for the Pearl of the Podcast. All right, David, what's the pearl today?
Yeah, I do have the pearl, and I'll read it. Despite having such a large design impact on the Sunset District, which was widely copied by Dolger and many other builders, it's estimated that the Rousseaus built fewer than 200 homes in the neighborhood. That's just in the Sunset, right? But as we've said, there are plenty of Rousseau copycats, and so you may not know if you actually have a real Rousseau.
I do not have a real Rousseau, but I definitely have a Rousseau copycat. and otherwise, all of this work that's done by us hardworking individuals at Western Neighborhoods Project, you know, it takes support from listeners like you. So why don't we give you a sneak peek into the benefits of membership? David, what do you get if you're a member of the Western
Nicole, longtime podcast listeners will know that they get a whole lot of benefits, including our quarterly member magazine, which just came out. We actually have a printed one if you want it mailed to you. You can ask for that. We have it online, of course, which you can get access to when you become a member. You get exclusive event items and discounts. These are, you know, lately we've been doing everything for free online, but you get to go on special member walks and special member talks and that sort of thing. The main thing that you get is the satisfaction of knowing that you are supporting this work that we're doing, this work that has put over 50,000 historic pictures online and available for free, this work that has created multiple hundreds of articles. We're doing our video series again, and so that's something that your membership pays for. And we dearly appreciate it, and we rely on you to do that. So go to outsidelands.org and click the Become a Member link, which is on the top of any page. And that is the end of that particular thing. Do we have a preview for next week?
We do. We are profiling a woman of the West Side, and an extraordinary, ordinary woman with one of the most incredible obituaries I have ever read in my entire life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you read a lot of obituaries?
So many obituaries. That's like most of what I do with my career in life.
Anyway, Nicole, we'll see you next week. Michael, thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yep. See you guys next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Outside Land San Francisco is recorded by Ian Hadley. Content creation and media production at ihadley.com.
To learn more about the Western Neighborhoods Project and more on San Francisco history, go to outsidelands.org. You can also find us on social media at Facebook, which is Outside Lands with an S, at Twitter, which is Outside Lands with a Z, and on Instagram, which is Outside Lands also with a Z. And check out our Historic San Francisco Images website at opensfhistory.org.